Welcome to Scary Stories, the channel that tells you scary stories.
Scary Stories by Peter Bernard. Number 1.
Bigfoot attacked my tiny house. As told to Peter Bernard, read by PQ River. A few years back, when I was in high school, I had a girlfriend who liked housey shows on TV. I was bored by all of them, except if it was about tiny houses. I liked the idea of having a little home, but I didn't understand who also bought property to put them on. I think if you're going to have a tiny home, make it portable. Instead of buying property, get a vehicle to move your tiny house around with. Now, all of America's your backyard. When I started senior year, Dad took me aside and told me he'd been putting away money for my college and to get me a car when I graduated high school. All it amounted to, though, was around $100,000. That might cover most of tuition, but not pay for a car. Dad said maybe I should consider a state college, then I could also have my books and expenses covered and get a car in the deal. But I told Dad I didn't want to go to college. I told him I wanted to own a mobile, tiny house instead. He ignored me and told me we'd speak about it again in a month. In a month, I had budgeted out everything for my tiny house. It had a porta-potty semi-attached, and it had solar panels in the roof, and a gas-powered generator for when I needed to recharge my phone or tablet. My dream is to be a writer, so why do I need to go to school? With a portable tiny house, America would become my school. Every second of every day would be an adventure. I made my strongest pitch to Dad, who looked at me as though I were suggesting eating the cat for dinner. Needless to say, senior year for me was one family argument after another. Dad tried yelling at me, ignoring me, saying undermining things to invalidate my feelings, and he even slapped me once for saying a tiny house would leave me free from rent. "Rent is a good thing," he screamed. "It teaches responsibility. It builds moral character because it keeps you from living your life willy-nilly." All year long, Dad tore into me, and all year long, I neglected to apply for any colleges, and I focused on shop class. I felt my freedom depended on me being able to build my own home, so I became a pretty good carpenter and electrician, although I wasn't actually licensed for that. When I started building parts of the house using my own money, Dad caved in and agreed I could follow my dream. He and Mom tried to then talk me into building a permanent tiny house that could essentially exist in their backyard and would tap into their electricity. That, to me, would defeat the entire purpose of what I was doing. My parents were terrified of the idea of me being parked in random, sketchy places where I could be exposed to all kinds of danger. Dad was concerned about car accidents and animal attacks, while Mom was convinced that just behind every tree line across America were roving gangs of illegal drug growers armed with machine guns and roofies. I told them to get Google Latitude and friend me, then they could always spot me on GPS.
"What good will that do?" my mother cried hysterically. "Give us the location where you died so we could go erect a marker?"
After a while, Dad got more used to the idea and even would join in and help me build it on weekends. We got a used pickup truck on the cheap from my Uncle Edgar and managed to make it all real for only about $80,000. That left me $20,000 of food and gas until I had to find new revenue streams. The first place I wanted to visit was Austin, Texas, so I taught my parents how to find me on GPS and split, driving southward. I would be lying if I told you this wasn't the most fun time of my entire life. I would go find out where the good bands played when they hit smaller towns and get to see them for less money and more intimate settings. I would meet awesome girls. I actually loved them and left them, just like guys in the old movies. I think it was probably about an hour from Austin when I pulled over and stopped on the side of a lovely forest road because it dawned on me that I hadn't smoked a doob in nearly 10 hours. I rifled through my stuff, looking for my lighter and everything, when I remembered I had left them in the house. I usually don't go inside without detaching it from the truck and setting it on solid ground, but this didn't really feel like a good place to do that, and all I wanted was a quick hit. I got out of the truck and walked to the front door, which was facing the rear. I climbed up and used my key to open the door, and then I heard the strangest sound from the trees across the road. Something was up in the branches, thrashing them about. Was it a bird? A group of birds? It was just starting to get dark, and that made it harder to see as I squinted up at the branches. Some kind of squeaking sound was coming from there. Was it a chirping sound? It had never occurred to me that this might be anything dangerous, so I jumped down away from the house door and walked over to the trees, squinting up at the source of the disturbance. It was monkeys. Two little monkeys playing in the tree. Out here in the middle of nowhere. I took one step off the road into the undergrowth, and something large and black swatted me in the face and upper chest, causing me to fly backwards 10 or 15 feet, then skid on my bottom until my back slammed hard into the wheel of my truck. As bad as that hurt, my backside hurt 10 times worse and felt like it was on fire. I stood up screaming in pain, and then my scream was drowned out by a deafening roar emanating by the largest, most terrifying man I have ever seen in my life. He was not an ape or a gorilla. He was a man who was 8 or 9 or 10 feet tall and covered in fur everywhere but his face. His features were Caucasian with a very big nose, but he looked somehow brain damaged and drooled on himself. His skin was black, like ebony wood, like black leather. His teeth seemed long and sharp, and his eyes glowed red. My head was in shock, but my body scrambled into the front seat of the truck and started the engine. The sound of the truck starting seemed to further anger the crazy, messed-up-looking giant man-monster, and he ran into my beautiful tiny home as I started to drive away. This made me spin a bit, and I almost drove off the road. The monster was screaming and slamming into my home as I tried to accelerate, and I could hear wooden glass breaking behind me. Eventually, I got away and couldn't hear any more destruction back there. I drove and drove until I found a gas station before getting out to assess the damages. Half the house had been torn off. Half the house was just gone, and most of what remained was trashed. There was no way I could afford to fix it on my own. I would need to get a good deal from my insurance people. And of course, that did not happen. Somehow, since they did not believe my story about Bigfoot, they decided I had done this to my house myself. They never explained exactly how I could have done any part of it, but they didn't give me a dime, and my dream of living free died because of that obnoxious, idiotic Bigfoot. These days, I work at a gas station and live in my parents' basement. Every single day they lecture me about how I flushed away my college money and ruined their lives. Their lives! They don't have to work at the gas station. I listen to everything I can find about Bigfoot. I hate that thing so much. I hear some people think he's a bipedal ape or gorilla. Some think he's Gigantopithecus. Some think he's a space alien. And some think Bigfoot is a tribe of ancient humans. But I think I know best what Bigfoot is. Bigfoot is a total jerkass. Screw you, Bigfoot!
Scary Stories by Peter Bernard. Number 2.
No Talking Orangutans. As Told by Peter Bernard. Read by Madeline Starr. I've always lived in New York City. I was born here, I grew up here, and I've never spent more than 5 days in a row anyplace else. Even so, fate has dictated that over and over again, I have found myself working with country people. I don't just mean people from the country. I mean people who can't stop talking about how great the country is compared to the city. The worst of them was my neighbor Sheila. She bragged on and on every day about the superior country air and the superior country lifestyle. For this reason, I always entertained the idea in the back of my mind that when I had saved enough, I would get a place to live out in the country. It was in the middle of a meeting with my accountant in 2013 that it occurred to me that the time had finally arrived. I had enough to get myself a small place outside the city. I didn't want anything large, which was a good idea because I couldn't afford that. I would probably only visit the place maybe 4 to 6 times a year, so the smaller the house, the less hassle for upkeep. Plus, I only needed a place big enough that I could have maybe up to 3 guests over at a time. The house I got was newly built, ultra-modern on the inside, but rustic and quaint on the outside. 2-bedroom cabin located by both Sproul State Forest and Teodagdon State Forest in Pennsylvania. Needless to say, I am not sure I'm pronouncing either of those correctly, as I had never heard of these places. That added to the charm, at least at first. It was around 4 hours of driving to get there when the traffic was flowing well, but it almost never was. If I didn't get into a traffic snarl while leaving the city, I got into one in New Jersey or else in Pennsylvania. I had enjoyed going on drives with my dad when I was a kid, taking in all the scenery as we drove. I noticed it was harder to appreciate scenery when you were in a bad mood from hours of traffic surrounded by rude drivers. When I finally arrived at the house to spend my weekend, I was alone, and that was a stupid decision that could have cost me my life, but I'm getting ahead of myself here. The sun was already setting, and I had cursed myself for not having left earlier or even the night before. Now I only had Saturday night and most of Sunday before I'd need to start driving back to the city. After unpacking and filling up the fridge and freezer with food, I made sure both the front and back door was locked. City habits die hard, and went into the bathroom to change into my nightgown. Now, while making the bed, I couldn't get over the weird feeling that I was being watched. It didn't even make sense, as there were no other cabins nor anything else man-made in view anywhere outside the window. Just grass, trees, and more grass. Still, to calm myself, I grabbed the largest knife I had in the kitchen, then went back into the bedroom for what I hoped would be a long, restful nap. It wasn't. I awoke roughly when someone began tapping on my window. I looked at the window but saw nothing. I don't mean I saw no body, I mean I couldn't see anything out the window. I rubbed my eyes, I tried to refocus them. I looked at my phone and could see it was 11:11 p.m. I remember the numbers exactly. Every time I see 11:11, I think about that old TV commercial, about that store that sold orangutans. 11:11, Old Country Road in Westbury, and no talking orangutans. Oh, wait. Maybe they didn't sell orangutans. Well, what did they sell again? I was about to Google it on my phone when tap, 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 someone tapped on my window again. This time, when I looked, I briefly saw a hand doing the third tap. Then it disappeared below the window. But somehow the window was still black. What had the hand been attached to? It looked like someone wearing a black glove had tapped on the window, then vanished. Was I dreaming? I looked at my phone and it said 11:12. So if this was a dream, it was one in which time passed the same as in waking reality. More confused than anything else, I got up and padded over the soft carpeting to the window and stared out at the blackness. So odd that I couldn't see any stars. One of the things I'd always been told about the country was that you can see 100 times more stars than you can in the city. No light pollution, so they say. But no matter how hard I squinted, all I could see was blackness. Then, in a surreal fashion, the hand rose up from under the window and tapped again. It tapped right in front of my face, and I could see the hand was much larger than my head. This time, because I was directly in front of the window, I could see from the moonlight glinting off it that it was a very dark hand, and it was connected to a very dark, hairy arm, and the arm led up and out of my view, presumably to a shoulder somewhere up there. So then the blackness in front of me must be... Suddenly the blackness moved. It folded itself downward. Downward until the giant head on top of this giant body had lowered itself until it was directly in front of my face. It looked like a giant from a kid's fairy tale book, only covered in hair. It didn't just have a beard, it had hair on its entire face, including its cheeks. It had a large nose that reminded me of my ex-boyfriend Tony's huge one. But this one was also covered in a dark, neat fur, like a cat's nose. We both looked at each other for a while. We just looked. He, I'm assuming it was a he, didn't seem surprised to see me or confused. He just looked. I guess I probably did the same. Something about standing on shag carpeting inside air conditioning can make you feel safe and all-powerful. I guess maybe I was thinking of trying to communicate with it, so I tapped on the window. Tap, tap, tap. That was something I should not have done. For whatever reason, this was interpreted by the thing as some sort of egregious breach of etiquette, as it reared back and screamed at me. The scream was so loud that the walls and floor of the cabin shook and the glass of the window burst in on me. I shielded my eyes, but glass got embedded in my arm, my face, and most of the front of my body. I fell backwards and landed hard on my rear, banging the back of my head on the corner of my bed in the process. When I managed to look up again, the creature was reaching through the window with its massively long arm and trying to grab me. Before it could, I scuttled backward up onto the bed, so it just reached in further and further. I felt like I had woken up in the original King Kong movie, only the set was moved out to the country. Suddenly remembering my knife, which now looked tiny and harmless next to this thing, I grabbed it and started stabbing as hard as I could. It screamed again, the force so harsh that it knocked me back behind the bed, closer to the bedroom door. I took the opportunity of a pause in the fight to grab my phone, race out to the living room, grab my purse that I hoped had my wallet and car keys in it, and tear out the front of the cabin to my car. Fumbling in my purse, I managed to unlock the car doors, aware that the noise to this would alert the creature to where I was. I knew I had little time to get inside, even before I saw it running around the house, looking more furious than I had ever seen anything look. Its head was literally taller than my home, which of course was impossible. How could such a thing exist? I got the door locked just as it reached the car and started banging on my roof. It hit the car so hard that the very first blow put a dent in the top, and I could tell it was going to be able to get in with just a few more hits. Hands shaking as much as the car, I dropped the key, then dropped it again, before finally managing to insert the thing and start the ignition. The sound of the car starting seemed to offend the creature, and now it banged on the hood instead of the roof. "The thing is going to crush my car engine," I thought as I hit the gas, thinking the car was in reverse. Instead, I drove forward directly into the thing. It fell backward, but I swear to you, my car bounced backward as well. Before I knew what happened, I had driven up into its crotch and presumably right over its, well, its private parts. It let out quite a different kind of scream that time. Now I actually got the car into reverse and backed up enough to make a U-turn out into the dirt road leading to the highway. As I started driving away, I looked in the rearview mirror and saw it was now bent and pointing down toward my seat. I looked instead in the side view mirror and saw the creature was up and starting to run toward me. After that, I didn't need to look as I could feel the heavy footsteps of the creature chasing me on the old country road. I floored the gas pedal and tried to remember any sort of civilization that might exist out here. Any people, any lights, anything that might distract or scare off this monster that otherwise was going to kill me. Remembering nothing, I drove as quickly as I could, heading in the direction of the highway. The monster, although gaining, still was a few car lengths away. If I didn't drive off the road, I still had a chance to survive this. I saw lights in the distance to the right. I couldn't couldn't remember what those lights would have been coming from, but I started beeping my horn anyway, desperate for any kind of help in this situation. When I came around the bend, I could see it was a gas station, and that just beyond was the highway. I drove through the gas station, beeping my horn over and over, and a guy was emerging from the office to see what was going on. The creature came right up behind me and screamed at that poor guy. I have no idea what else happened then, because I used that poor gas station attendant as a distraction and made it onto the highway. I was crying ridiculously at this point, and had a very hard time seeing the unlit road. The only illumination was from my headlights, and that was all the illumination there was going to be for the next 10 or 20 miles. When I finally made it to a lighted road, I found myself weeping for the poor gas station attendant, hoping he made it out alive. If he didn't, was I responsible for his death? Was I now a murderer simply because I wanted to own a cabin in the woods? I don't remember much about the rest of the ride home, except my happiness at seeing the sunrise again. I pulled off the road for a while to watch it rise, to pull glass shards out of my body, and to have a good cry. When I got back to the city, I, for the only time ever in the history of New York City, actually found a parking spot directly in front of my apartment building. My neighbor Sheila was sitting out on the front steps, playing with her phone. When she saw me getting out of the car in my nightgown, she let out a laugh. What happened to you? Have a slumber party in your car? Without saying a word, I walked up to her, still bleeding, still with glass in my hair, and I punched her right in the jaw. She fell back onto the steps, and I didn't even look to see if she was okay. After showering and changing, I went to the emergency room and had the rest of my cuts and bruises cleaned. 3 cuts needed stitches, but I had gotten out relatively unscathed. If you, like me, are from the city, you should take my advice. When people from the country complain to you about how much better the country is than the city, just ignore them. If what they said were true, they wouldn't have moved to the city in the first place, right? Right.
Number 3.
My dog left me for Bigfoot. As told to Peter Bernard, read by PQ River. Back in early 2009, I had just turned 30 and decided to go camping alone with my dog, Terry. Terry was a golden retriever and my best friend. She and I had camped together since she was a puppy. We lived in Hampton, New York, which is upstate near the border of Vermont. We never had to travel far to find good places to camp, and we had built up a false sense of security, feeling as though the entire region was our backyard. This time, for my birthday trip, we established camp literally less than a mile from my house and only planned on spending a 2-day weekend there, coming back Sunday evening. Friday night was uneventful, and we hung out together by the campfire, enjoying the quiet of the forest and crashing early. Saturday, we awoke early as we heard something thrashing around outside our tent. Terry was growling, and I got my rifle ready before opening the tent wide enough to look outside. What I saw was not what I had expected. It was a pack of dogs. They'd knocked over my cooler, but hadn't succeeded in getting inside it. Not yet, anyhow. I shouted from the tent and got their attention. They didn't seem frightened by me at all and just looked. They appeared to be mutts, German shepherds and terriers mostly, but with darker fur. They'd probably been descendants of pets, but these dogs were definitely feral. One of them started growling at me, and Terry backed up behind me inside the tent whimpering. Not sure what else to do, I fired the rifle in the air above them. The sound surprised them, and they backed up a few feet each. That's when I heard loud cracking noises, as if some huge animal were about to emerge from the forest behind them. I mean, something very huge, like an elk or a bear or a freaking water buffalo. I saw the tops of the trees swaying as this creature, whatever it was, made its way toward the tree line. When it emerged, I almost dropped my rifle. It was a huge, hairy man who looked like he was wearing a ghillie suit. If he was a man, he had to be over 7 feet tall, and he had matching ghillie's boots on as well. It also had the broadest chest I'd ever seen on anyone. This guy must have been the greatest athlete in history. Why, he was wasting his time terrifying me in the forest instead of competing in the Olympic Games, I couldn't figure out. Then it let out a bellow, and I no longer considered it a human at all. I was pretty sure that my rifle would only make it angrier, and I realized that hairy thing now decided whether I would live to see another birthday or not. I withdrew inside the tent, and my entire life flashed before my eyes. Everything I'd done but wished I hadn't. Everything I hadn't done but wished that I had. I tried to pray silently, but the tears were streaming from my eyes, and I pet my whimpering dog. Eventually, the sounds outside the tent went away and were replaced with the song of birds. We waited an extra half hour before I grabbed what I could carry. We both walked the mile to our home. I figured I'd go back during the week to pick up my tent after I wasn't so shaken up by what had happened. When I got home, I really thought the entire incident was over. I napped most of the day and then got up to make something to eat. After dinner, I let Terry out to do her business behind the house and went upstairs to take my shower. This was our normal evening routine. Just before hitting the sack, I went out back to call Terry in, but got no response. Wandered around the property searching for her, but nothing. I had a terrible night, unable to get much sleep and haunted by nightmares when I could. I got two buddies the next morning and we launched our search of the area. None of us ever saw Terry again. My friends both thought she must have lost a fight with a bear or a mountain lion, but I don't think that at all. We never found a body, so I think Terry is still alive. I think she just went to live with Bigfoot and his pet dogs, that's all. I think she's probably the mother of a whole new generation of Bigfoot's pets. My friends think it's odd that I never got another dog after that, but it's not something I could ever explain to them or that they could ever understand. And, no, I've not gone camping again since.
Come back for more scary stories.